I'm wearing the Blue Peter badge because I took part in one of the most important, not secret, intelligence operations in modern times. It was called Operation Petra. This was named not after the Rose Red City half as old as time, but over the most famous person in the history of Blue Peter broadcasting, that is to say, its first dog, Petra. Operation Petra was to find the best spies in Britain, aged between 8 and 14. And they all went through a long preliminary process, thousands of them. And we got them down to a long short list of eight. They had a weekend which may well be more exciting than any other weekend they'll ever have. From the moment that we put them on a blacked-out helicopter and took them to a remote airstrip in order to try to decipher, decrypt a secret message on the tarmac, and we finally got it down to three. They were going to be presented with their awards in MI5 headquarters, the first time cameras had ever been allowed into MI5 headquarters. They were carefully supervised while they were there. British security did not suffer from this episode. But they were given their awards by Sir Andrew Parker, the Director General of MI5. And there is one lad, well, this was 5 years ago, so I suppose he would be 15 now, but at 10 years old, he looked to me like a future head of the Secret Service. In the middle of the last thing they had to do, you know, there were cameras around and retakes and so on, he said, "I can also tell jokes about spies. What shoes do spies wear?" And the answer is sneakers.
Well, to your book now. Has it always been espionage that's interested you, and why?
No, what interests me is the bit that other historians leave out. And if you go back through the history teaching that you had from primary school up to whatever later level it was, what was always left out is the secrets. But the British have been better than any other democratic country in keeping secrets. So, you know, just within my lifetime, and I suspect within yours, the best-kept secret in British history, which was at Bletchley Park, conveniently situated halfway between Oxford and Cambridge, they were looking for university recruits, broke bit by bit all Hitler's ciphers. And for 30 years after, the 10,000 people who worked there didn't reveal the secret, with the exception of one who was a Russian spy, that he only told the Russians. So anybody doing research in any area, and it really doesn't matter what the area is, a pretty good area to concentrate on is the bits that others leave out. And nowadays, paradoxically, we know more about the secrets of Bletchley Park than we know about the secrets of how we beat Napoleon 150 years earlier, and the secrets of how we beat the Armada in 1588. So what my book, The Secret World, seeks to do is put in the bits that have usually been left out.
And do you have any restrictions when you write something like this? Does somebody say, no, you can't put that in? There was a good reason it was left out.
Not in this book, because I'm taking a very long view, but I've been extremely fortunate to have more really interesting jobs than I think anybody has a right to. So for the better part of a decade, I was official historian of MI5. And I'm allowed to say, which is most unlike other members of MI5, that I was a member of MI5 for that that period. So things in the history, which was my previous book, this the first history of MI5 based on its files, that would do damage to its current operations, no, I left out, and I still take the view that anything that would make it less likely for us to be able to keep track of terrorists, less likely to keep track of what Vladimir Putin is up to in Britain, is not something that should be published so that either terrorists or Putin could read it.
And how far back did you go when you decided to start this? Where was your starting point?
The beginning in recorded literature is the ancient world. And, you know, it's difficult now to remember that 100 years ago, if we'd been having this interview, which would have been difficult because it was before the invention of the radio, the stories that listeners would have known best would not have been any stories about British intelligence at any point in English or British history. They would have been the stories from the Bible, because the first great secret operation, which is really well recorded, there are others that are not so well recorded, is when God told Moses, look, the promised land is over there, you better get on with it. Send out 12 spies to spy out the land of Israel and work out how to go in and take it over. Moses messed it up. Only 2 of the 12 spies were any good. And so God essentially said to him when he was, okay, 40 years in the wilderness for you, and then you can have a quick peek at the promised land from the top of Mount Nebo. And that was it for Moses. And he handed over to one of the 2 spies who had been successful 40 years earlier, and his name was Joshua.
So spying, espionage, has always been a part of culture.
Well, it always has. I mean, I've yet to meet a human being who is uninterested in secrets. There has never been a government which is not interested in what other governments are up to but don't admit it. There is no government nowadays which is not interested in what terrorists are up to. Now, the same applies to criminals. Criminals do not send you a text saying, I'm actually going to be invading your house at 3 o'clock in the morning and I intend to take the following. No, the only way that you could discover what they're up to is by finding out their secrets. And what Putin is up to in this country, though not as dangerous, the only way we can possibly have an understanding of that is by having an understanding of how intelligence operates. Previous experience of intelligence is, I think, less well known than any other major area of human activity, and that was what attracted me to it.
Has it always been governments or the people in control, monarchies, dictators, who have been the main consumers of espionage, if you like?
Well, anybody who's in charge of running a country has, I think, more need to understand threats to it, both internal and external. But no, there's plenty of freelance activity. All terrorists wish to make for sure, first of all, that we don't know what they're up to, and secondly, find secret ways of getting around the obstacles that we put in their place. So counter-terrorism. It would be impossible without intelligence, and it's not just not just spies. You know, if we go back to the first great age of British intelligence, which was Queen Elizabeth the First, there were a series of assassination plots against her. 2 successive kings of France amongst her contemporaries were assassinated. She wasn't. Why? Because her intelligence was better than theirs. Why did the Armada stand no chance of success? Well, it's a complex set of reasons. But having broken Philip II, the King of Spain, the mightiest ruler by far of his era, having broken his ciphers, we knew what he was up to. So knowing other people's secrets when they're threatening you is really important. When they're not threatening you, there is absolutely no need to know their secrets.
So many, many times spying has changed the course of history.
Information changes the course of history. There are only 2 ways that you can make a decision. One is by guesswork, and the other is on the basis of an informed understanding of the situation. But the more threatening the situation is, the more the threats are going to be worked out in secret. And so the only way of discovering what the threat is by using secret methods.
Was there a peak spying period?
Yes, now. Simply because there are more secrets around now than there ever were before. As the world becomes more, and has become more global, it means that what's going on the other side of the world affects us in a way that it never did before.
So it's a lot of cyber spying now, then?
Well, that's there are all kinds of ways, new and old, of collecting and discovering secrets. But the old methods still exist. You know, after all, what could be more traditional than the last attempt that we know of to assassinate a foreign government's attempt to assassinate people on British territory? The Skripals 2 years ago in Salisbury. I mean, that was utterly traditional. You get hold of a couple of assassins, and by the way, Putin had already made them heroes of Russia. They were, he thought, some of his top people. Actually, I think they were pretty incompetent. Anyone who saw them pretending not to be assassins on television will agree with that. So, in everything, it's a mixture of the old and the new. So the idea nowadays that it's all cyber didn't have anything to do with the attempt to kill the Skripals.
And we think we know about spying through John le Carré novels and the such like. How realistic are those? How close to the truth are they?
They're not, because they're novels. I mean, one of the reasons that intelligence in general, espionage in particular, is so misunderstood is that it's the only profession of any importance in Britain in which people understand what is said in spy novels and spy films far better than what actually happened. I mean, a majority of the world's population, we don't know the exact figure, have seen and enjoyed James Bond films. You may remember that at the last moment of what I would think of as real optimism in British society, the opening of the London Olympics, James Bond and Her Majesty the Queen did a parachute jump into what is now the O2 Arena. There are those who say that Her Majesty was using a body double, but honestly, would she do a thing like that?
And will it ever end, Sir Christopher? Will we ever have a time where we don't need spies, they won't be used anymore?
No, because one of the constants, which I think we can trace back at least to the Magdalenian period, in other words, the better part of 20,000 years ago, is that human nature has not changed. From the moment that human nature has changes, there won't be spies. Until it changes, there will be. Cambridge 105 Radio.